Welcome to the Doug Haldeman Show, Mortgage and Real Estate Talk, a show committed to educating, empowering, and entertaining you while saving you thousands. Here's your host, mortgage expert and consumer advocate, Doug Haldeman.
Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune. It's time to gain knowledge and become the guardian of your financial future. I want to thank our sponsor, Cornerstone Mortgage, known for having the lowest rates and the smoothest closings. If you have a question you'd like addressed in the air, you can text or call me at 314-472-DOUG. Again, that's 314-472-DOUG, D-O-U-G, which is 3684. You can also visit our website at smartwithyourmoney.com. So smartwithyourmoney.com, you'll get all kinds of information from our blog, and you also can visit us on Facebook at Doug Haldeman Show. Look us up and hit the like button like over 3,000 people in St. Louis have. So I want to welcome to the air today, I have in the studio, good friend, longtime business colleague and, you know, and personal friend, John Neiman, CPA. Welcome, John.
Hi, Doug. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you've been a guest on the show many times, but it's been a little while since you've been on. So I'm glad to have you back.
Thanks.
So a little bit of background on you, because you're founder of Neiman and Company, and I know you're a leading expert in solving individual and small business IRS tax problems. And you also are a certified tax resolution specialist as well as a CPA. What does that mean?
Well, a certified tax resolution specialist means that not only do I know the Internal Revenue Code, but I know the Internal Revenue Manual, which is what the Internal Revenue Service uses as a guideline to collect delinquent taxes. And
their favorite hobby.
Perform audits and things of that nature.
So you have 35 years experience as a CPA in tax arena, and for the last 15 years, you've dedicated it to helping individuals and their businesses solve these IRS collection-related problems, right?
That's correct. Most of the people that were coming to me had issues with the IRS, and I quickly learned that you need to dispense with those before you can move forward.
And you know, I love your license plate. Why don't you tell us what your vanity plate says?
My vanity plate says T-A-X-H-8-R.
Which would be phonetically pronounced tax hater.
Tax hater, yes. But I don't want anybody to misunderstand. I don't hate taxes. I think everybody should pay their fair share. What that might be is best left to economists and politicians. I don't even hate the IRS. I actually enjoy working with the IRS. What I hate is the ham-fisted manner in which these collection procedures are applied, and also the way in which taxpayers view representation as a do-it-yourself project, or they hire someone who is less than qualified to get them the most advantageous result.
You know, we see that in a lot of different industries where people often underestimate the complexity in what someone else does. Okay, I see it with all kinds of other professions. I think they can put tile on their floor, and next thing you know, it doesn't look right. Okay, as a do-it-yourself project.
I know. I had that experience once when I tried to replace the insides of a toilet tank once, and I ended up eight trips to Ace Hardware, and probably 30 hours later, I got it fixed.
Yeah, I had a plumber come to my house. I needed a shutoff valve put below my bathtub. And I was thinking, do I want to do this? Yeah, plumbing issues are things I typically try not to take on. So the guy shows up, and I swear it took him less than 5 minutes, and I had to write a $175 check. But I would have spent who knows how long on it and probably had water leaking all over the place.
Exactly. It's the same principle.
Right. Definitely the same principle. So tell us, over the last quite a few years, I mean, we heard a lot about IRS budget cuts, and I don't know if they really had budget cuts, and are you seeing many changes in how the IRS operates?
Yeah, they've had huge budget cuts, and as a result, the IRS has had to rely more and more on their technology, and as a result, they've had a lot of turnover in agents, revenue officers, revenue agents, and other personnel, which is why when you try to call the IRS, you end up with what they call a courtesy hang-up. after about 10 minutes, they figure you've been on hold too long, so to help you out, they hang up on you and tell you to call back.
Isn't that nice of them?
Yes. But it all has to do with the budget cuts, and it makes my job a lot more difficult. And even for the do-it-yourselfers, it becomes just maddening.
Yeah, because if, you know, there's not clear channels to go through, and you have to really be able to wade through all the garbage. And you know, I'm going to say that my education level when it comes to taxes and when it comes to dealing with the IRS is certainly well above like a you know typical consumer out there, because I've had to deal with them. But I wouldn't deal with these issues on my own. And it's something that if I, you know, I wouldn't dream of trying to tackle these things on my own, because I don't know where you can push and where you can pull, and you know the exact forms to fill out and the procedure where somebody's already like you've already cut through what doesn't work.
Exactly. And most people will wrongly assume that all I have to do is fill out a form. Well, that is true to a certain extent, but the way you fill it out is critical in the result that you achieve.
Okay, in case you just joined us, you're listening to the Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1. We're broadcasting from the Cornerstone Mortgage Studios, and we're speaking with John Neiman, CPA and tax resolution expert. So, John, let's talk about when the IRS collects money, where does it go? Okay, what are the main things that you see, and even just for a U.S. consumer, for all the money that comes in your household, where is all the money going when you start to break those numbers down?
Well, I won't begin to address what the U.S. Treasury does with the money after they collect it, but it goes to the U.S. Treasury. Now, as far as a typical household, the IRS will typically take off the top. If you assume, and statistics will tell you, the most recent ones from the Department of Labor tell you that the average U.S. Household makes $63,000, and the IRS will take about $13,000 of that right off the top, and they're usually the first ones to get paid.
First in line.
First in line. And of the remainder, the huge, overwhelming majority of it goes to housing. Including your house payment or your rent payment and utilities and food and things of that nature.
Okay, so all that money, and then you know, we're dishing out a big section of our money is going to tax. And with the IRS, when they're looking, wasn't there a change a few years ago on them really deciding to go after all the uncollected revenue that's out there?
Yeah, that's referred to as the tax gap. And that was something that got Congress pretty excited when they figured out that there was over $450 million out there that wasn't being collected, either because of underreporting, non-filing, or underpayment of tax.
Okay, so $450 million.
$450 billion.
Oh, I'm sorry, $450 billion that they felt like was out there for them to go get.
Low-hanging fruit.
Okay, and with that low-hanging fruit, did they break that down at all into the types of people that fit into that category?
Well, the underreporters are the vast majority of them. And
so underreporters, meaning that they're just underreporting their income.
Right. They're
Or
exaggerating their expenses. Maybe not exaggerating, but overestimating, I should say. Underreporting because they inadvertently omitted a 1099. Certainly nobody does it intentionally. But what that resulted in was the IRS getting a lot more funding from Congress to go after this tax gap, because it's easy money for them. They don't have to raise taxes. They just have to increase enforcement.
When for the underreporting, I guess that's going to be broken down between individual income taxes, estate taxes, employment taxes, corporate income taxes. All of those are areas for the underreporting, I'm assuming, that fit into that, right?
Right. And most of that is handled by computer. It's automated because they match what you're reporting on your tax returns, particularly with the advent of electronic filing. They can easily match what you're reporting to what has been reported on your behalf by those folks that are paying you money.
Right. So there's, you know, if you worked four jobs last year and one of them gave you a W-2 and you were only there for a couple weeks, and now you've moved and they'd sent the W-2 to some previous address, and you just kind of forgot about that W-2 when you're filing. It's been turned into the IRS, so now that's going to show up in that underreporting category, right?
Yeah, and they're really nice about it. They tell you what's missing, what the additional tax is, and they even send you a return envelope with a coupon in it to make your payment.
Make it nice and convenient.
Exactly.
Well, I could see that being as simple, too. Let me give you an example. So when I have a babysitter for the summer, okay, that's a deductible expense as long as I file that under my child care, and I have their Social Security number and their address and everything. But at the end of the year, as an individual, I'm not typically issuing a W-2 or anything to them. So, but when I report their information, if that, you know, if that person that did babysitting, for instance, doesn't report that money, now it's going to get cross-referenced by the IRS if I've reported their Social Security number and stuff on my tax return.
Right.
So that information has to then get communicated to make sure they report it.
Exactly.
So that's one of those minor but still simple situations where you have to be careful and protect yourself to make sure you don't just accidentally drop off income.
Exactly. And the other thing is that many times these underreporter notices are incorrect, simply because maybe the asset was transferred. And if it's a stock or a security of some kind, you might have transferred it to a minor child.
Right.
But it's still in your Social Security number.
And then we also get people that are in the, well, I guess the other than underreporting, what are the other categories that people fit into on this? I guess you have the non-filing is one.
Non-filing, and they will eventually catch up with you.
So it's just somebody who didn't file their tax returns at all.
Didn't file their tax returns, and they're very good about this as well. They will accommodate you by preparing a return on your behalf, and it will include
kind of like force placed insurance.
Exactly. they will prepare a return on your behalf, and it will include all of the income that was reported. They will use the worst filing status, which is usually single, and they will give you no deductions. And they will send you a bill telling you that they filed a substitute for return, and they expect their money immediately. They file a lien, and they begin collection efforts.
And then past non-filing is underpayment. So these are just people that just didn't pay in enough.
They've prepared their tax return. They're, for example, this happens a lot with 1099 contractors. They might have a really good January, but no work in February and March, and April rolls around for the first quarter estimated payment, and by golly, they've spent all that money. They have no money to make that first quarter estimated payment. And then they have a very good June, but September rolls around, and they haven't paid the money in yet. And by the end of the year, when they file the tax return, now they owe $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 in taxes, and it's gone.
Well, in the same way that if a company, you know, if they're withholding for payroll taxes, best thing is to just pull that money to the side at the very beginning, have it in some place that you can't get to it.
Right.
So that as you make the money, you automatically are saving the amount that you're going to have to pay in.
Well, one of the things that I have my 1099 contractors do, if their income fluctuates like that, is I have them make monthly estimated payments, because there's no magic to the quarterly estimated payments. They will allow you to make a payment every month if you want.
Very interesting. I didn't realize that. So, John, we need to take a quick break, but if you can stick around, I have more questions for you, because I want to know, for the people that the IRS is now going after that fit into these categories, what happens when they come after them, how much time do they have, and how can it be resolved? You're listening to Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.